This is an election news special from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. After an enormous victory in Kentucky today, Senator Hillary Clinton vowed to stay in the race until the nominee is decided, whoever she said she may be. But Senator Clinton also spoke about the importance of unifying behind the candidate.
I commend Senator Obama and his supporters, and while we continue to go toe-to-toe for this nomination, we do see eye-to-eye when it comes to uniting our party to elect a Democratic president in the fall.
Senator Clinton won the Kentucky Democratic primary by better than 2-1, but time is rapidly running out in her campaign to overtake Senator Barack Obama. He's expected to win the lion's share of the delegates tonight in Oregon. Polls in that state don't close for another hour. And there are just three primaries left in Montana, Puerto Rico, and South Dakota. Neither candidate can reach the magic number in pledge delegates, but before the night is out, Senator Obama should secure a majority. He's also overtaken Senator Clinton's once formidable lead among the superdelegates and appears to have a clear path to the nomination. Senator Obama is in Des Moines, Iowa tonight, and we're going to go now to NPR's Don Gagne, who's there with the Obama campaign. Don, are you with us?
I am here. How are you?
Very well. Thank you, Don. And we're expecting Senator Obama shortly?
We are. I'll tell you, for a lot of us, it was culture shock. We have not seen Iowa green. we're so used to the snow. And we're told that he actually will be out here, well, they said right after the top of the hour. So we're there, so we could see him at any time. There's a huge crowd downtown, the Capitol building as a backdrop. And he's come back for two reasons. A, to say thank you to these folks who really set him on his way back on January 3rd when he won the Iowa caucus unexpectedly. But also he comes here with an eye toward November. This is going to be a very important state.
Yet it might be seen by some in the Clinton camp as a premature victory lap.
Well, it does feel like a victory lap, and it does feel increasingly inevitable. Certainly his supporters all feel it's a done deal, those who are here in the crowd. But he is going to be very careful not to claim victory, even though he will, note that with tonight's delegate allegation that they will have the majority of pledged delegates that were up for grabs over the course of the entire primary season. But they are very careful in how they talk about this being a victory. About the only thing the campaign will say now is that they do expect to be over that magic number of 20-25, combining pledged delegates and superdelegates, by June 3rd. That'd be the day of the Montana and South Dakota primaries.
And those are the last contests. Unless something very strange happens and there's some sort of a revote in Michigan and Florida, which seems very unlikely this time around, of course, those two states are still up in the air.
Exactly. And, the 2025 number that everybody looks to does not include Michigan and Florida. And the Clinton campaign argues that it's a meaningless number unless you put those in there. But the Obama campaign says, that's the number everybody's been shooting for. And they do feel they will be there by June 3rd. But tonight, again, they're going to look for the candidate to offer congratulations to Senator Clinton on the Kentucky victory. He'll be speaking here before the polls have closed in Oregon, but they do expect to do very well there and to come away with a win from there this evening.
They're also expected, just looking a little bit further down the road, to do well in Montana and South Dakota. Senator Clinton is expected to do well in Puerto Rico. But nevertheless, there are just a few delegates left. That decision on Florida and Michigan could be made in a Democratic National Committee Rules Committee meeting scheduled for the end of this month. So, yes, indeed, it could be decided by June 3rd.
Yes, and recall that that decision won't be made in Michigan and Florida without input from the Obama campaign. I mean, they really do have the upper hand, and with the superdelegates that have been coming his way, you get a sense that they might be a little magnanimous in the kind of split they agree to. But again, they will not agree to anything that is going to harm his chances of securing the nomination. They really are in the driver's seat there.
And the last several days of this campaign, I guess really the last 2 weeks of this campaign, both candidates have been very spare in their descriptions of the other. Very few attacks on Senator Clinton by Senator Obama. Indeed, he's holding his fire against John McCain.
Exactly. He has had nothing but positive things to say about Senator Clinton. And, you know, we're just starting to get the program underway. You can hear the cheers going up. But again, no sign of the senator yet. We know he's here because I came in with him. But no sign of him up on the stage just yet. The other thing they are very mindful of, this is kind of the delicate end game. They are confident that they're more than confident that he will be the nominee. They know he is going to be the nominee within the Obama campaign. They want to be careful to let Senator Clinton decide how these last weeks before the final primaries play out. And they don't want to do anything that would alienate her supporters. So we will see language tonight about how he has, he is now guaranteed to hold the majority of the delegates that were up for grabs in primaries and caucuses, but there will be no pressure on her to step down. He will be very magnanimous tonight.
NPR's Don Gagne with us from Des Moines, Iowa. We're expecting Senator Obama to appear there shortly to speak to supporters in the state, which gave him a lead, which he never surrendered. And Don, we're going to let you go in a moment, but before we do, where does Senator Obama go from here?
Well, even though his words won't claim victory tonight, his schedule sure tells us he's looking to November. I mean, he's here in Des Moines. For the next 3 days, he will be in Florida. It's a state he hasn't really campaigned in because of, the disputed early Florida primary. So he's looking to Florida already, and he's been to Michigan. He may make a stop in Puerto Rico. He will, again, also be back in South Dakota and Montana. We're told to expect that. But Florida, the next 3 days, that is a really big and important campaign swing there. In some ways, introducing himself to the people of Florida.
Because he did not campaign there. Florida and Michigan, just for those who haven't kept track of these arcane facts, voted out of order. Therefore, they were not allowed to campaign. None of the candidates campaigned in either state. Many of the candidates, including Senator Obama, took their name off the ballot in the state of Michigan. Nevertheless, Florida and Michigan will be critical to whoever wins the election come November. So I believe Senator McCain has made 3 trips to Florida in the last couple of days.
Yes, and again, Senator Obama in the past week was in Michigan. That's where they held the big rally in Grand Rapids when he got the endorsement of former senator and former candidate John Edwards. He'll be going back there as well. But Florida, it really is an important trip for this campaign, these next 3 days in Florida.
Well, let's bring in NPR political editor Ken Rudin, who's with us here in Studio 3A in Washington. Good evening, Ken.
Hi, Neil.
And, we still await results from Oregon, but nevertheless, a thumping victory for Senator Clinton tonight in Kentucky, where she won by 35 percentage points and got about 250,000 more votes than Senator Obama.
And it mirrors her victory last week in West Virginia, the same kind of demographics, white voters, lesser educated voters, lower income voters. But again, the kind of coalition that Democrats you think would need if they're going to pull off the victory against John McCain in November. But Hillary Clinton won over all these groups, as she did in West Virginia and to a lesser extent in Pennsylvania on April 22nd. It's interesting how we keep saying that Barack Obama has the nomination sewn up, that all the superdelegates are going to him, that all the fundraising, all the money is going to him, and yet she still shows, Hillary Clinton shows extreme strength in states like this, and the obverse thing is that Barack Obama shows a surprising weakness in these kind of states.
She shows strength, she argues, in states that will decide the November election, states like Pennsylvania, Ohio, West Virginia, Kentucky, and obviously big states, New York and California, like that.
Right, but the Obama people will also argue that some of the states she wins has won in West Virginia, Kentucky, are unlikely to go Democratic either, no matter who gets the nomination. But it does show work needs to be cut out for Barack Obama if he's going to assemble the kind of Democratic coalition to make the election in November close.
Again, we're awaiting Senator Obama's appearance at a rally in Des Moines. Iowa, where his campaign for president began, last year, and where he won the Iowa caucuses on January 3rd. It's going to have been a five-month marathon between January 3rd and June the 3rd by the time this race is decided. Nevertheless, he is closing the circle tonight in Des Moines, and we'll bring you his remarks as soon as he begins, and it's expected any moment now. And Ken Rudin, as you look at the results this evening, you talked about the demographics in Kentucky, but very different in Oregon.
Absolutely. We saw that in exit polls in Kentucky, race was a very important issue for many voters. In Oregon, the exit polls showed the exact opposite, a more liberal electorate in Oregon, less race consciousness than it is in Kentucky.
And, of course, a mail-in election. We'll talk about that more later when results come in from Oregon. As you hear, Senator Obama has begun to come into the rally there in Iowa. Have Don Gagne, you were able to see him yet?
I've not seen him yet. I heard the roar. I heard the announcement, and they're playing his signature song. You know, "You Too." It's a beautiful day. I think that's what they're playing. Now it's a little hard to hear it over the crowd, he's working his way in. He's working his way in from. Looks like he's about a half a block away from me right now.
And still a ways away from...
I can see them all the way across the way, kind of on the other side of the road sign that tells me which direction the state capitol is. So, but he and his wife, Michelle, and their two daughters are with them here as well. They were on the plane as we flew here.
And it must be a very gratifying moment for Senator Obama as he realizes that, barring some sort of miracle, the Democratic presidential nomination, is his tonight.
That's absolutely the feeling of this campaign. And it's a big part of the reason why they came back to Des Moines, back to Iowa tonight. They are really appreciative of what this state did for them in the caucuses. It was that unexpected big victory, and it's a way to come back on this important night, not when he can claim victory, but when he can say he's guaranteed to have won the majority of the pledged delegates, to come back to this state, to say thank you, to say, hey, I haven't forgotten you, to say, listen, we've come a long way, but there is a great deal of work to be done between now and November, and by all accounts, it sure looks like, and he's acting like he's a nominee. His language won't quite state that tonight, but I think I'd be hard pressed to find a single person in this whole crowd who doesn't think they're here cheering on the next Democratic nominee. He's taking the stage now, waving to the crowd. His two daughters, Michelle Obama, they're waving, and it's certainly an adoring crowd here.
Ken Rudin?
Well, I was going to make the point that Don said earlier, that even though he cannot claim victory and it's dangerous...
He's still about 10 feet to the left of the podium and the microphone. So we'll see how long. There's a kiss on the cheek to Michelle, and a kiss on the cheek for each of the daughters. The older daughter kind of patted him on the head, like saying to him, "Go get him, Dad." And here comes Senator Obama right now to the microphone.
Senator Obama going to the microphone in Des Moines, Iowa.
How's
Let's
it going,
listen.
Iowa? It is good to be back in Iowa. I love you back, Iowa. First of all, let me say thank you to Candy Schmieder for the wonderful introduction and the unbelievable work that she did on behalf of our campaign and still does. There are too many good friends and people who work tirelessly on my behalf to thank. You know who you are individually. I just want to say, first of all, thank you to all of you for the great work that you did in helping to kick off this campaign. And I do want to take a point of personal privilege and just say that I sure have a nice-looking wife and kids. You know, so they are... You know, there is a spirit that brought us here tonight. A spirit of change and hope and possibility. And there are few people in this country who embody that spirit more than our friend and our champion, Senator Edward Kennedy. He has spent his life in service to this country, not for the sake of glory or recognition, but because he cares deeply in his gut about the causes of justice and equality and opportunity. So many of us here have benefited in some way or another because of the battles he's waged, and some of us are here because of them. We know he's not well right now, but we also know that he's a fighter. And as he takes on this fight, let us lift his spirits tonight by letting Ted Kennedy know that we are thinking of him, that we are praying for him, that we are standing with him and Vicky, and that we will be fighting with him every step of the way. You know, 15 months ago, in the depths of winter, it was in this great state where we took the first steps of an unlikely journey to change America. The skeptics predicted we wouldn't get very far. The cynics dismissed us as a lot of hype and a little too much hope. And by the fall, the pundits in Washington had all but counted us out. But the people of Iowa had a different idea. From the very beginning, you knew that this journey wasn't about me or any of the other candidates in this race. It was about whether this country, at this defining moment, will continue down the same road that has failed us for so long, or whether we will seize this opportunity to take a different path, to forge a different future for this country that we love. That's the question that sent thousands upon thousands of you to high school gyms and VFW halls, to backyards and front porches, to steak fries and JJ dinners, where you spoke about what the future would look like. You spoke of an America where working families don't have to file for bankruptcy just because a child gets sick, where they don't lose their home because some predatory lender tricks them out of it, where they don't have to sit on the sidelines of the global economy because they couldn't afford the cost of a college education. You spoke of an America where our parents and our grandparents don't spend their retirement in poverty because some CEO dumped their pension. An America where we don't just value wealth, but we value work and the workers who created the wealth. You spoke of an America where we don't send our sons and daughters on tour after tour of duty to a war that has cost us thousands of lives and hundreds of billions of dollars, but has not made us safer. You spoke of an America where we match the might of our military with the strength of our diplomacy and the power of our ideals. A nation that is still the beacon of all that is good and all that is possible for humankind. You spoke of a future where the politics we have in Washington finally reflects the values we hold as Americans, the values you live by here in Iowa: common sense and honesty, generosity and compassion, decency and responsibility. These values don't belong to one class or one region or even one party. They are the values that bind us together as one country. That is the country. That's the country I saw on the faces of crowds that would stretch far into the horizon of our heartland. Faces of every color, of every age. Faces I see here tonight. Your Democrats, You're Democrats who are tired of being divided, but you're also Republicans who no longer recognize the party that runs Washington, and independents who are hungry for change. You're the young people who've been inspired for the very first time. And those not so young folks who've been inspired for the first time in a long time. You're veterans and churchgoers, sportsmen and students, farmers and factory workers, teachers and business owners who have varied backgrounds and different traditions, but the same simple dreams for your children's future. Many of you have been disappointed by politics and politicians more times than you can count. You've seen promises broken, good ideas drowned in the sea of influence and point scoring and petty bickering that's consumed Washington. And you've been told over and over and over again to be cynical and doubtful and even fearful about the possibility that things can ever be different, can ever be better. And yet, in spite of all the doubt and disappointment, or perhaps because of it, you came out on a cold winter's night in January in numbers that this country has never seen, and you stood for change. You stood for change, and because you did, a few more stood up. And then a few thousand stood up, and then a few million stood up. And tonight, Iowa, in the fullness of spring, with the help of those who stood up from Portland to Louisville, we have returned to Iowa with a majority of delegates elected by the American people, and you have put us within reach of the Democratic nomination for President of the United States of America. Some bumps along the way. I've made some mistakes. But also it's partly because we've traveled this road with one of the most formidable candidates to ever run for this office. You know, in her 35 years of public service, Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton has never given up on her fight for the American people. And tonight I congratulate her on her victory in Kentucky. You know, we've had our disagreements during this campaign, but we all admire her courage and her commitment and her perseverance. And no matter how this primary ends, Senator Clinton has shattered myths and broken barriers and changed the America in which my daughters and your daughters will come of age. And for that, we are grateful to her. Now, some may see the millions upon millions of votes cast for each of us as evidence that our party's divided. But I see it as proof that we have never been more energized and united in our desire to take this country in a new direction. More than anything, we need this unity and this energy in the months to come, because while our primary has been long and hard fought, the hardest and most important part of our journey still lies ahead. We face an opponent, John McCain, who arrived in Washington nearly three decades ago as a Vietnam War hero and earned an admirable reputation for straight talk and occasional independence from his party. But this year's Republican primary was a contest to see which candidate could out-Bush the other. And that's a contest that John McCain won. The Bush tax cuts for the wealthiest 2% of Americans that once bothered John McCain's conscience are now his only economic policy. The Bush health care plan that only helps those who are already healthy and wealthy is now John McCain's answer to the 47 million Americans without insurance and the millions more who can't pay their medical bills. The Bush Iraq policy that asks everything from our troops and nothing of Iraqi politicians is John McCain's policy too, and so is the fear of tough and aggressive diplomacy that has left this country more isolated and less secure than at any time in recent history. The lobbyists who ruled George Bush's Washington are now running John McCain's campaign. And they actually had the nerve the other day to say that the American people won't care about this. Talk about out of touch. I think the American people care plenty about that. Now, I will leave it up to Senator McCain to explain to the American people whether his policies and positions represent long-held convictions or Washington calculations. But the one thing they don't represent is change. Change is a tax code that rewards work instead of wealth by cutting taxes for middle-class families and senior citizens and struggling homeowners. A tax code that rewards businesses that create good jobs here in America instead of the corporations that ship them overseas. That's what change is. Change is a health care plan that guarantees insurance to every American who wants it, that brings down premiums for every family who needs it, that stops insurance companies from discriminating and denying coverage to those who need it most. That's what change is. Change is an energy policy that doesn't rely on buddying up to the Saudi royal family and then begging them for oil. Change is an energy policy that puts a price on pollution and makes the oil companies invest their record profits in clean, renewable sources of energy that will create millions of new jobs and leave our children a safer planet. That's what change is, Iowa. Change is giving every child a world-class education by recruiting an army of new teachers with better pay and more support, by promising 4 years of tuition to any American willing to serve their community and their country, by realizing that the best education starts with parents who turn off the TV and take away the video games and read to their children once in a while. That's what change is. Change is ending a war that we never should have started. Change is finishing a war against Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan that we never should have ignored. Change is facing the threats of 21st century, not with bluster or fear-mongering or tough talk or suspending due process, but with tough diplomacy and strong alliances and confidence in the ideals that have made this nation the last best hope on earth. That is the legacy of Roosevelt and Truman and Kennedy. That, Iowa, is what change is. That is the choice in this election. The same question that first led us to Iowa 15 months ago is the one that's brought us back here tonight. It's the one we will debate from Washington to Florida, from New Hampshire to New Mexico, the question of whether this country, at this moment, will keep doing what we've been doing for 4 more years, or whether we will take that different path. It's more of the same versus change. It's the past versus the future. It has been asked and answered by generations before us. And now it is our turn to choose. We will face our share of difficult and uncertain days in the journey ahead. The other side knows they have embraced yesterday's policies, so they will also embrace yesterday's tactics to try and change the subject. They'll play on our fears and our doubts. They'll try to sow discord and division to distract us from what matters to you and your future. Well, they can take the low road if they want, but it will not lead this country to a better place. It will not work in this election. It won't work because you will not let it work. Not this time. Not this year. And the decency and honesty and generosity of the American people is not based on false hope or blind optimism, but on what I've lived and what I've seen in this very state. For in the darkest days of this campaign, when we were dismissed by all the polls and all the pundits, I would come to Iowa and see that there was something happening here that the world did not yet understand. It's what led high school and college students to give up their vacations to stuff envelopes and knock on doors. It's why grandparents have spent all their afternoons making phone calls to perfect strangers. It's what led men and women who can barely pay their bills to dig into their savings and write $5 checks and $10 checks. And why young people from all over this country have left their friends and their families for a job that offers little pay and less sleep. Iowa, change is coming to America. Change is coming. It's the spirit that sent the first patriots to Lexington and Concord, and led the defenders of freedom to light the way north on an underground railroad. It's what sent my grandfather's generation to beachheads in Normandy, and women to Seneca Falls, and workers to picket lines and factory fences. It's what led all those young men and women who saw beatings and billy clubs on their television screens to leave the safety of their homes and get on buses and march through the streets of Selma and Montgomery, black and white, rich and poor. Change is coming to America, Iowa. It's what I saw all those years ago on the streets of Chicago when I worked as an organizer, that in the face of joblessness and hopelessness and despair, a better day is still possible if there are people who are willing to work for it and fight for it and believe in it. That's what I've seen here in Iowa. That's what is happening in America. Our journey may be long, our work will be great, but we know in our hearts we are ready for change. We are ready to come together. And in this election, we are ready to believe again. Thank you, Iowa, and God bless you. God bless America. Thank you.
Senator Barack Obama speaking to supporters outside the Iowa State Historical Building in downtown Des Moines, where he returned where his campaign started, he said, 15 months ago. And he returned to Iowa today with a majority of the delegates elected by the American people, he said, and within reach of the Democratic nomination for President of the United States. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to an NPR election news special. NPR political editor Ken Rudin is with us here in the studio. We're going to be joined by advocates and experts and analysts. We also want to hear from you tonight. Throughout this remarkable campaign, what surprised you? What changed your mind? Join the conversation. Give us a phone call, 800-989-8255. You can also send us an email. talk@npr.org is our address. And tonight, Ken Rudin, Senator Obama, not quite declaring victory, nevertheless some very gracious words about his Democratic rival, Senator Hillary Clinton, who won handily today in the state of Kentucky, and a stinging attack on George Bush and John McCain.
Well, there was a big difference, and you saw it in the tone between Barack Obama's victory speech, which we expect to come in later in Oregon, and Hillary Clinton's victory speech in Kentucky. Hillary Clinton was still fighting for the nomination. She still makes the case that she'd be a stronger nominee against John McCain in the fall, that the race is not over, that every vote should count, and she talked again about the fight for the delegates in Michigan and Florida. As you say, Barack Obama spoke about the Bush-McCain ticket. He, aside from congratulating Hillary Clinton and the great fight she's run, and the great, the valiant effort she's made and how made women all over the country and all over the world proud, he really focusing his rhetoric on Bush and McCain and the general election. And by doing that, you don't rub it in Hillary Clinton's face, but basically you are looking beyond her and towards November.
And joining us now is Congressman Jim Clyburn, a Democrat from South Carolina, who is, I guess he's superdelegate, too. Congressman, nice of you to be with us this evening.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
And I wonder what you thought of as you listened to Senator Obama speak this evening.
I thought it was an outstanding speech. He reconnected himself with the values that he laid out at the beginning of the process, and, of course, caused the entire country to look into and listen to. And I thought it was a good speech.
Is the campaign over for all intents and purposes?
Well, the campaign is not over, but the results are pretty much determined, I believe. I think that the campaign still goes on. We still have other Democrats to participate in the process. And I've always said that I thought that both candidates should go throughout this entire process. The problem is whether or not both candidates will conduct themselves in such a way that we will do great credit to the Democratic Party and not cause much harm. I think when you start going after the other candidate and in any way denigrating various aspects of the campaign, you do not do the party what I consider to be a lot of credit. And so I think the campaign should go on and both candidates should go all the way through June 3rd.
Ken Rudin?
Congressman, there's the exit polls coming out of Kentucky show that barely a third of Hillary Clinton supporters say they would vote for Barack Obama if he were the nominee in November. Now, of course, that's a poll that's coming out in the heat, in the middle of a very tense and personal campaign. But does that get you nervous that many Hillary Clinton supporters are hesitant about backing Obama for the fall?
No, that doesn't make me nervous at all. I come from South Carolina, and it doesn't make me nervous at all that the same kind of result would show up in South Carolina. You know, people keep talking about places like West Virginia and now Kentucky, and they can't seem to forget about North Carolina and Virginia. Both those states are two or three times the size of the two states we're talking about. I think that Barack Obama seems to be getting votes in Virginia that Democrats never got before, votes in North Carolina that we have not gotten in a long time. So I think that all of this ought to be taken into account and not concentrate so much on what may have happened in the heat of a very contentious campaign.
You've said that you should wait until the entire process is over. Everybody's had a chance to vote, but it sounds like you're ready to cast your ballot for Senator Obama.
Well, I think that if you look at the map, you look at the delegates, the placed delegates, I don't see any way possible for us as superdelegates to go out now and reverse what the pledged delegates have done. And as I listened on the floor of the House earlier this evening, it was very clear to me that there is a pretty significant drift, maybe even a slide, of superdelegates toward Barack Obama.
Senator, Congressman Clyburn, thanks very much. This is NPR News. This is an election news special from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. With me, NPR political editor Ken Rudin. And we just heard from Congressman Jim Clyburn, who said, this is all but over.
Yes, but he also says that every vote should count. Everybody should have their say. So it's not over, and that Hillary Clinton should drop out of the race tomorrow. As we've said all night, there are three more contests: Puerto Rico, Montana, South Dakota, and of course we had the DNC meeting on the Michigan and Florida delegates on May 31st. But by June 3rd, June 4th, all the voters presumably will have counted, and then perhaps we'll talk about the race being over.
We want to hear from listeners this hour as well. 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. What surprised you about this long campaign between Senator Barack Obama and Senator Hillary Clinton? And if you're a Democrat or voted for a Democrat in one of the primaries or caucuses, how did you make up your mind? Let's go to Sean, and Sean's calling us from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Hey, how's it going?
Very well.
That's good. I'll tell you what made up my mind. I'm African-American, and, you know, at first when Barack Obama came on the scene, I took him for a gimmick. You know, I didn't pay him any attention. But when he won the Iowa caucus, you know, I started to pay attention because, quite frankly, I'm pretty sure he didn't have a massive swing of black voters behind him there, and that proved something to me. You know, he has something to say, and that's when I started listening. You were going to say something?
I was just going to ask Ken Rudin. I think a lot of people agree with you, Sean. After Iowa caucuses and Senator Obama's surprising victory there, a lot of people started to take him pretty seriously.
And we saw a lot of African-American members of Congress who endorsed Hillary Clinton in 2007, people like John Lewis of Georgia, Charlie Rangel of New York, thinking that Hillary Clinton was the inevitable choice. And as Barack Obama won victory starting in Iowa, the tone certainly changed around the country.
And, Sean, did you vote for Senator Obama in the North Carolina primary?
Yes, I did. I didn't, you know, and I didn't vote for him because he was a black man. I just voted for him basically because in my entire voting career? he's just the most level-headed person that's came out. Of course he's a politician, and of course he has his own agendas, and he's going to spin things to make it sound good. But at the same time, you know, you could tell more honesty is coming from him than from Hillary Clinton or McCain. And see, I'm independent. And, you know, so I'll go either side of the aisle, you know what I mean? And it's just more honesty coming from him, and he has more of a level playing field.
Sean, thanks very much for the phone call. Appreciate it.
Can I make one more comment?
Sure.
I have, like the senator that you just had talking, I don't think that Hillary Clinton should continue only because what's going on now is it's going to just muddy the waters and make things more complicated in the end. Because, you know, you think about it, a lot of people pull the race card, and it shouldn't be pulled. And what's going on now is, you know, with Barack Obama, all those major victories he's won, you know, there's no states out here that you could say are predominantly black that I know of. And, you know, he's still made a lot of major victories, and now she's coming around to, you know, predominantly white states and really making landslides, and that's muddy in the waters, making it seem like, well, maybe he cannot win the white vote, when actually all that's going on is, you know, she's making really big waves in, you know, predominantly white states, and that's making it seem like she's actually doing something when she's not.
Thanks very much, Sean. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Joining us now on the line from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, is Governor Ed Rendell, a supporter of Senator Hillary Clinton. Thanks very much for being with us this
evening. Hi, Neil. How are you?
I'm very well. And, so, of course, Senator Clinton has to be congratulated on a comprehensive victory tonight in Kentucky.
Yeah, another smashing victory. This is the oddest thing I've ever seen. People are saying the candidate who in the last 3 months has won 7 of the 10 primaries, 5 of them by some cases historic proportions, that she should get out. It boggles the mind.
At this point, there's very little time left for her to make up ground on Senator Obama.
Yeah, except that all of the superdelegates are free to change their mind between now and the convention. And I think any fair assessment of where we are now makes it pretty clear that Senator Clinton's our best candidate to run in the fall. If we're looking to win, and that's what this party should be all about, and bring change to America, she's a much stronger candidate. I mean, just take a look at Florida, Ohio, West Virginia, Kentucky, Arkansas, states that were all red states in the last election. She can win all of those states. She's ahead of Senator McCain in the polls in all of those states, even Kentucky today, which is remarkable. If she brings those states in, she'll win a 300-plus electoral victory. Plus, she's much better suited to keep the Pennsylvanias and the Michigans in the blue column. So I think every superdelegate, if they look deep into their heart, has got to admit that she's clearly the strongest candidate for the fall.
Ken?
Governor, then how do you account for the fact that even since the April 22nd Pennsylvania primary, which she won by nearly 10 points, the flood of superdelegates have been going in the Obama direction?
I think the superdelegates are making a rush to judgment, and it's clearly the wrong judgment. And I think if West Virginia and Kentucky haven't delivered that message, 41 and 36 points, a 250,000 vote plurality in Kentucky tonight, if that doesn't drive home the message, I don't know what will. I mean, there's a lot of, look, Senator Obama is a charismatic figure. He infatuated the media first, and he's infatuated a lot of voters, no question about that. But clearly not enough voters right now to be a certain winner in the fall. And I think Senator Clinton is electorally a certain winner in the fall. And that's what we as a party ought to be interested in.
We hear her argument. We hear your argument. Nevertheless, do you think that Senator Clinton should go back on the attack against Senator Obama?
No, not at all. She just has to deliver the positive message she's been delivering. And I heard her deliver for 7 weeks in Pennsylvania. It's a positive message that is resonating with Americans who don't really care that much about change. I mean, I hear all this rhetoric about change. They care about gas prices and food prices and the interest rates on student loans and what we're going to do about mortgage foreclosures. Those are the bread and butter issues, the economic issues. And Senator Clinton speaks to those issues more forcefully and more clearly than anybody else.
And I have to ask you, your name has come up as a possible vice presidential candidate.
Well, I've been in this business for 32 years. I got elected district attorney at the age of 32. I've been my own boss for 32 years, with one exception, the year I was DNC chair in 2000, and I got in frequent trouble for telling the truth. So that year convinced me that I am not a good number two person. So I want to stay as governor of Pennsylvania, but I also want to make it clear that you don't need me on the ticket to get me to work to carry Pennsylvania. Whether it's Senator Obama or Senator Clinton, I'm going to work my heart out because this country desperately needs change, and either one of them will bring us the change we need.
Governor, thanks very much for being with us this evening.
Thanks, guys.
That's Governor Ed Randell of Pennsylvania with us on the phone from Harrisburg with his dog barking in the background. And Ken, that's the Clinton talking points. She is not giving up until the last vote is counted.
Well, but why not? I mean, we've waited this long. And, you know, you mentioned earlier, Neil, how long this has been. For those of us who were upset about 2000, 2004, that the Democratic nomination was over in a matter of seconds, I think this has been great for the party and great for these states like Pennsylvania, like Indiana, like West Virginia, who haven't had a say in decades.
And let's hear an excerpt from the speech that Senator Clinton gave earlier this evening in Louisville, Kentucky, after she emerged with a smashing better than 2-1 victory over Senator Obama. And here's what she had to say.
And I'm going on now to campaign in Montana, South Dakota, and Puerto Rico. And I'm going to keep standing up for the voters of Florida and Michigan. Democrats in those two states cast 2.3 million votes, and they deserve to have those votes counted. And that's why I'm going to keep making our case until we have a nominee, whoever she may be.
Comment that thrilled the crowd tonight in Louisville, Kentucky, and we'll hear more from Senator Clinton a little bit later in the broadcast. I'm here with NPR political editor Ken Rudin. We also want to hear from listeners this hour. What surprised you about this long contest between Senators Clinton and Obama? And if you're a Democrat, if you voted in the Democratic primary or in the Democratic caucus, what made up your mind? 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And let's go to Ian. Ian's calling us from Mililani in Hawaii.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead, please.
Sure. You know, looking back on it, I think one of the things that, picking up on another caller's theme about muddying the waters, is that this long process actually, well, it's great, and I think it should continue for the entire process to energize voters, and it's great that people have been participating. I think it does confuse the balance of the race when you show onesies and twosies states that maybe don't matter that much in the big scheme of things but get a lot of attention for a short period of time. I think the big, looking back, the big issue from this is that the country needs to switch to a more realistic, more fair, more balanced sort of regional primary situation where folks like even John Edwards could have continued in the race probably longer for that matter in a situation like that. And they wouldn't quite have all these all this attention and this division at the end, scratching for the last, you know, few votes left. I don't know what your analysts think about that, but that's kind of, when I look back on it, it seems a little distorted.
Well, Ken, for the past several weeks at least, there certainly has not been a scorched earth campaign by either of the Democrats.
No, but there are bad feelings, clearly, among Obama and Clinton supporters vis-a-vis the other candidate. But, you know, about these piddly little states, if you look at the 2000 election, had Al Gore won the piddly state of West Virginia or New Hampshire or one of the states like that, I mean, so in this weird electoral college map, these small states where the candidates spend an over amount of time, and especially large amount of time, I think they could ultimately decide who's the next president of the United States. But as far as this being a wise way of electing a president, that may not make sense. But the PS to all this, had Michigan, and we say this over and over again, had Michigan and Florida stayed where they were in the schedule, like mid-February, rather than try to rush to January, then lose all its influence, had they stayed where they were, they could have been king or queen makers in deciding who the nominee would be.
Ian, thanks very much for the call.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye. Let's talk to Tony. Tony's in West, just says West in Michigan. I assume it's West something in Michigan.
Yeah, it's West Bloomfield.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I guess what surprised me the most was the persistence that Senator Clinton has during this campaign. I'm not sure if there was any other candidate it would have given up by now or not. The other comment that I have to make is that myself and my wife has MS and she's a handicap. We took the effort to go and vote during the Michigan primary, and I kind of feel like we've been cheated out of this campaign because I'm not sure what's going to happen to the votes and to the delegates from Michigan or Florida.
And
do you have any comments on that?
Oh, I was just going to ask you before, but whom do you blame for that? This was made a decision by party officials, national officials. Nevertheless, it was local officials there in Michigan, Senator Levin and Governor Granholm, who decided to move the primary.
That's correct. I don't know. I really don't know who to blame for this. I just know that it was out of our control as residents or as citizens. And when they told us to go and vote, we did.
Ken Rudin, Tony's point about, these people voted, they should not be disenfranchised, that resounds very heavily in the Democratic Party.
Well, whoever's fault it was, whether it was the Republican legislature in Florida, the Democratic governor in Michigan, the DNC, whoever's fault it was, it's clear that the voters in Michigan and Florida paid the price because their votes didn't matter. What's going to happen on May 31st, the DNC meeting here in Washington, is very, very crucial. As Don Gagne mentioned earlier, perhaps if Barack Obama is thought to have the nomination well in hand, he could be magnanimous enough to allow Hillary Clinton to claim the victories that she says she's earned by winning in Michigan and Florida, even though they were thrown out. But if the party could come together on Michigan and Florida, it seems that that's the last barrier to Hillary Clinton's, not so much a concession speech, but realizing that her fight has been won and done.
I'd like to make another comment. To be honest with you, we both voted for Clinton, but we didn't have a choice. That was the only person on the ticket. If we had a choice and Obama was on the ticket, we would have voted for Obama.
Right. Well, Obama, most of the other candidates, decided since it would not count, they would take his name off the ballot. Hillary Clinton's name was on the ballot along with Chris Dodd, Dennis Kucinich, and perhaps a few others. But you're absolutely right. There was not much of a choice.
Tony, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's talk now with Michelle. Michelle with us from Cambridge in Massachusetts.
Hi. I just wanted to say that one of the things that was most convincing to me or most important to me in my decision to support Senator Obama was Ted Kennedy's endorsement, just because I think it's impossible not to admire Obama for what he, his policies and his tremendous ability to speak and move people. But it was hard to know how well-respected he was, what his connections were. Was he someone who could actually get this job done? And I think when, for people my age, by the way, I'm a 57-year-old white woman who's been a staunch Obama supporter for a while. I think when Ted Kennedy came out and endorsed him, it convinced me that we had once again, you know, a chance to vote for a liberal.
And, of course, the other major political news today, Senator Kennedy, his doctors at Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston diagnosed him today with a malignant brain tumor, which is, of course, very sad news. And we await the final word on what the tests will show, what exactly kind of tumor it is, what kind of treatment it is. But both Senator Clinton tonight and Senator Obama, very gracious remarks in their speeches, Ken Rudin, about Senator Kennedy.
Yeah, it was, I mean, a lot of people were talking about him almost in the past tense. And, of course, he's been in the Senate since 1962, a lion. What he's accomplished in his, you know, 40-plus years in the Senate is remarkable. But one thing that also struck me, that Hillary Clinton started this race as the choice of the Democratic establishment. And yet, as Michelle points out, Ted Kennedy endorsed Obama, Bill Richardson, Chris Dodd, John Edwards, a lot of his fellow rivals in Iowa, New Hampshire, rallied around the Obama candidacy. And that's what's so remarkable about this, because we talked about, especially on this show, about Hillary Clinton's inevitability. And the fact is that Obama's campaign basically outworked her. They outworked her in the small caucus states that the Clinton campaign basically ignored. And the fact is, here we are, you know, the end of May, it's still going on, but Barack Obama has the nomination in hand, something we never would have expected a year ago.
He also outworked her on the internet and in raising money, too.
Tons of money, more donors, you know, more small donors, like 4 feet tall, whatever they are, but more donors than we've ever seen in the history of political fundraising.
Michelle, we're sure you're taller than 4 feet.
A little. But I did want that. The reason I wanted to bring it up is because I, like so many people, are so moved and concerned for the Kennedys. And I think you just can't underestimate the effect he's had on all our lives.
Senator Kennedy resting tonight in a hospital in Boston, Massachusetts. Michelle, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Not to harp on bad news and bad health news, but also the news that Hamilton Jordan, President Carter's former chief of staff, passed away tonight. He had suffered from cancer. He died this evening as well. Another very sad moment.
If you're just joining us, a thumping victory earlier today for Senator Hillary Clinton in Kentucky, where she won by 35 points and got 250,000 more votes than Barack Obama. There is, of course, another primary today. That is in the state of Oregon, which conducted a mail-in vote, as it always does. The polls remained open until about 3 minutes from now, where people can deliver their ballots in by hand if they choose to. All of them will be counted, including those that were mailed in. Senator Obama is expected to do well in the state of Oregon. Almost no matter what happens in the state of Oregon, he will pick up the three or four delegates that he needs now to claim a majority of the elected pledged delegates, those who were elected in caucuses and in primaries, and thereby have, well, what seems to be a clear path to the Democratic presidential nomination. In any case, we'll begin to get results from Oregon in just a few minutes, Ken.
Right, and that's basically the Obama argument. Yes, he'll concede Hillary Clinton's point that nobody will get the 2026 delegates when all is said and done, because there are still outstanding superdelegates who have not declared. But it is a milestone. It is something to point out that on his road to the nomination, he has a majority of the delegates awarded via primaries or caucuses, and for the superdelegates to decide otherwise, as Governor Rendell suggested earlier, would be against democracy in his view.
Stay with us. We'll bring you the results from Oregon as they come in. I'm Neil Conan, along with NPR political editor Ken Rudin in Studio 3A in Washington, D.C., and this is an NPR election news special. From NPR News, this is an election news special. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Kentucky Democrats gave Senator Hillary Clinton a big win today over Senator Barack Obama. But in Oregon, today's other contest, Senator Obama is expected to win the day. Earlier this evening, he spoke to supporters in Des Moines, Iowa, symbolically closing a circle in the state which started him on his way toward the ever more likely Democratic presidential nomination. He has yet to claim victory over Senator Clinton, nor has she conceded, but he's certainly marking a milestone in the campaign. And when results from Oregon are counted tonight, he'll be able to claim a majority of elected delegates. We'll look back over a remarkable campaign this evening with some old friends who've been with us from Iowa to New Hampshire to Super Tuesday, all the way down to these final five primaries. And we'll take your calls. What surprised you during this campaign. If you voted in a Democratic primary or caucus, what made up your mind? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. NPR's political editor Ken Rudin is with us. And Ken, any results from Oregon as yet?
No, it's counting slowly. But actually, they started the counting at 12:01 Eastern time almost 24 hours ago. They started counting. They've been counting all day, but now they're starting to release the numbers very slowly. But as you say, Barack Obama, in this mail-only, M-A-I-L-only election, he's expected to win.
Remind us how this works. There are no polling places today open.
No, exactly right. They've had some time earlier in the month that the ballots went out and they would bring them to special mailboxes to mail them in, and they're counted by mail. They insist that there's less fraud, by all indications, Oregon is one of the cleanest elections in the country, and a lot of it is credited to this mail-in only balloting.
And it normally, how long does it take to tally up the votes after the polls close?
No, we should have something by tonight, certainly. And they've been counting all night. They're not just starting now at 11 p.m. Eastern time. They've been counting for, since midnight this morning. And so for the last 11 hours or so, they've been counting.
Just 11% of the vote in so far. Thus far, obviously, very preliminary. Senator Obama leads Senator Clinton by about 2-1. Interestingly, that was about the margin earlier today in Kentucky when Senator Clinton scored an impressive victory by more than 250,000 votes.
But a much different demographic, and we've talked about this over and over again, that in Kentucky there's a lot of more blue-collar workers, more lower-income white voters, less educated voters. In Oregon, it's upper-educated and far more white, percentage-wise, more whites in Oregon than there are in Kentucky.
We mentioned Senator Obama returning to Iowa, the state where his surprising victory in the caucuses on January the 3rd gave him a lead which he has never surrendered in this race. But there was another critical contest very early, and that was in the state of New Hampshire. Joining us now from Concord, New Hampshire, is political commentator Arnie Arneson. She hosts the New Hampshire radio talk show Chowder in the Morning, and she was a Democratic member of the New Hampshire House of Representatives for 8 years. And Arnie, nice to talk with you again.
It's a pleasure. How are you, Neil?
I'm well, thank you. We all remember as the place where New Hampshire is the place where Senator Clinton staged a remarkable rebound and resiliency that she has shown throughout this campaign.
Well, like Bill Clinton, they both love New Hampshire. They became the comeback kid. Only Bill Clinton actually lost to Paul Tsongas, but Hillary Clinton cleaned Barack's clock in New Hampshire. And that shocked everyone because those days before that election, everyone was assuming he was going to have a comfortable margin of victory of 4 or 6 points. And obviously, the numbers and the story changed dramatically.
The polling, even on election day, turned out to be, very wrong.
Absolutely wrong. Absolutely wrong. And to a large extent, I think Hillary Clinton benefited from that, but I also think that was a liability, because I think she assumed that the machine and the inevitability that was always part of her destiny was proven in New Hampshire, and all she had to do was sort of sit back and just let it take off. And, of course, Barack Obama never let that happen.
And if Barack Obama established the kind of candidacy that he was going to mount in Iowa, it really was in New Hampshire. One particular moment where Senator Clinton seemed to find her voice, let's listen to what's, I guess, become a famous clip in political history at this point.
It's not easy. It's not easy. And I couldn't do it if I just didn't, passionately believe it was the right thing to do. I have so many opportunities from this country. I just don't want to see us fall backwards.
Arnie Arneson, it can probably be overstated the degree to which that made a difference. Nevertheless, it seemed to emblemize Senator Clinton's support among women, which has been, her singular advantage throughout this campaign.
There is no question that she has played the gender card. Something she feels very comfortable doing, something that really is not perceived as a liability. Barack Obama could never play the race card. That would be perceived as a liability. But Hillary had, I think, a problem, and that's this, is that while she's playing the gender card and while she's appealing to the fact that she would be the first woman president of the United States, she was also running as the incumbent. She was also running as the machine. She was also running as inevitable. And you know what, Neil? How can you be this new woman and be the incumbent? How can you be this breath of fresh air and this change and be inevitable? I think it was kind of a mixed message. And while in New Hampshire, I think she touched a chord, and this was a place where Bill and Hillary Clinton ran in 92. They came back in 96. They were here again in 2008. And for them, it was a recycled campaign. And it's not surprising that she was able to rehabilitate here. But I also think it set the stage for some of the problems that she is going to and has experienced throughout the last couple of months.
Let's get a caller on the line, and let's go to Sharon. Sharon's with us from DuBois in Pennsylvania.
Hi.
Hi there.
I was listening to the radio and not realizing I was going to be on.
Well, congratulations. You're on the radio.
All right. That's great. Sir, what I wanted to say is I certainly voted for Barack Obama. We went to see him live in State College, and we were thrilled to death with him personally, his message, and just the feeling that he's a real person. And I, for the first time in my life, canvassed for him here in DuBois, Pennsylvania. And my observation was from the people that I canvassed, the majority were undecided. I really feel had Senator Obama come through this northwestern part of Pennsylvania even a little bit, he would have done much better here than he did. People wanted to see him. They wanted to hear him. And he didn't. He came through the southern part, but he did not come up into this northwestern area. I know it's rural. I know it's less populated, but so many people really wanted to see him and to hear him. And I think, like in Virginia and Kentucky, I suspect had he spent more time, he might have done better there as well. So that's sort of my observation, and it sort of surprised me that he didn't come into more of these rural areas.
I'm sure you meant West Virginia. He did win the Virginia primary, yes.
West Virginia, just the other day, yes.
And Arne Arnesen, those rural areas, not just in Pennsylvania, but throughout the contests in the Democratic campaign, that was Clinton country.
I think that caller nailed it, though. There was a term of art that I heard in the 2004 campaign that I want to share with your listeners, and they were comparing two wives, Laura Bush and Teresa Hines Carey. And here are the words they used, Neil. They described Laura Bush as familiar, and they described Teresa Hines Carey as foreign. And what you were hearing from that woman who just called is that I think because Barack Obama didn't spend time in those rural areas, because he didn't spend time in West Virginia and Kentucky, he still remained foreign to those voters. And Hillary Clinton, no question about it, is incredibly familiar because of all those 35 years of experience and all that opportunity and having come from Arkansas and obviously having spent the time. I think what will be fascinating is to see is whether Barack Obama, after June 3rd or whenever the nomination is sewed up, whether he will not run away from those rural areas, but in fact go back to them, dig deep in them, and actually spend the time so he becomes familiar.
Let's get another caller in. This is Lisa. Lisa with us from Lincoln City in Oregon.
Yes, thank you. Like the previous caller mentioned, so many people have been, you know, uncertain and riding the fence as far as who to vote for, but it was really brought home and clear to me this last week when ex-President Bill Clinton came to Lincoln City, actually down in Newport, and spoke there. And it was a presidential speech that was inspirational and gave me hope for our country, a type of speech that I haven't heard in the last 8 years. He was articulate and intelligent, and he spoke clearly on a myriad of issues and their interrelationships. His speech clearly cemented my decision that with Hillary and President Clinton, we are getting a twofer. You know, they're well-networked. They have a broad and extensive experience. And it just, I was clearly decided. I got in my car, came home, and filled out my mail-in ballot and dropped it off the next morning.
Lisa, thanks very much for the call. By the way, NPR News has just declared Barack Obama, the victor in the Oregon primary. That's, 17 minutes after the polls closed there. And currently with, I think, just about 15% of the vote in, he leads by 20 points. Nevertheless, he has been declared the victor by NPR News of the Oregon primary. Lisa, thanks very much for the call. And before we let you go, Arne Arneson, at this point, any doubt in your mind, any lingering possibility that Barack Obama will not be the Democratic nominee?
No. And you know what, Neil? Think about this. If you go back to that first time I watched him in December of 2006, and here's what he said to the audience. It was the largest turnout in New Hampshire history for a pre-primary event. I mean, people were like, where did you come from? And you know what he said? He said, I'm not quite sure why I'm here. And he said, but you know what I promise you? If nothing else, I'll be your placeholder for change. Look at what he said in December of 2006. And I keep sitting here thinking, oh, my God, it's 2008. And all those resumes and all those machines who had prepared to run for years, who were the long-distance runners, who had the organization and the Rolodex, they all must be sitting there looking at their spouses and their campaign staff going, where did he come from? And how did this happen?
And then
I don't think there'll be anything that will surprise us now. I think he probably is the nominee.
Arne Arneson, thanks very much for being with us this evening.
You're welcome.
Arne Arneson with us on the line from Concord in New Hampshire. Ken Rudin is with us. We want to hear your calls as well. 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. This is an election news special from NPR News. This is an election news special from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Earlier today, Senator Hillary Clinton scored a tremendous victory by 250,000 votes in the state of Kentucky. Tonight, Barack Obama leads Senator Clinton by 20 points with 29% of the vote counted in the state of Oregon. With that already in hand, NPR News has declared Barack Obama the victor in tonight's Oregon primary. I'm here with NPR political editor Ken Rudin. And Ken, almost automatically, given that result, Barack Obama has now won a majority of the pledged elected delegates, delegates elected in primaries or in caucuses, who will be going to the Democratic Convention in Denver.
Right. That total is 1,627. And obviously it sends a signal to the remaining superdelegates, just in case there was any doubt, that the people, at least, if you not include Florida and Michigan, as the Hillary Clinton campaign would love to count, but those who have counted, the states that have counted, the primaries and caucuses, Barack Obama has won a majority of those delegates. And ultimately, it's the delegates, not the popular vote, that gets you the nomination for the party.
Earlier today, Senator Obama spoke to his supporters in Iowa and said that he was within reach of the Democratic nomination. He started in Iowa 15 months ago. He said everybody wrote him off, and, well, he'd come back to Iowa to thank that state for his surprise victory in the caucuses that propelled him to a on the road to the Democratic presidential nomination. Senator Clinton spoke to her supporters in Louisville, Kentucky, and said that she would remain in the race. Senator Clinton said that she wanted to stay in the race until the nominee is decided, whoever she may be. She spoke kindly of Senator Obama and spoke of the need for party unity as well, not quite conceding, not raising the white flag, saying all the votes need to be counted, including Florida and Michigan. Wait till the process is over, till South Dakota, Montana, and Puerto Rico have their chance to vote. But that ends in a couple of weeks on June 3rd, by which time she may agree that there is a nominee for the party. We've been checking back in with some old friends who've been with us through this campaign. Let me introduce two more of you right now, and that is Rui Teixeira. Rui Teixeira, a visiting fellow at the Brookings Institution, an expert on political demography and geography, and his latest book is America's Forgotten Majority, Why the White Working Class Still Matters. He's with us here in Studio 3A. Very nice of you to be with us this evening.
Glad to be here, Neil.
And also let me introduce Kelly Goff, a political analyst, author of Party Crashing, How the Hip-Hop Generation Declared Political Independence. She joined us from her home in New York. Kelly, good to speak with you again.
Great to be back.
And Kelly, we first met you at Morgan State University, where a lot of historically black university in Baltimore, Maryland, where we gathered a lot of African Americans to talk about their impressions of Barack Obama fairly early on in the race. Let's listen back to what some of the black voters had to say at Morgan State.
There are lots
of Obamas in the black community. And I couldn't live with myself if I didn't give that brother my vote.
Young black people or black people in America are not proud to be, we're not able to be proud to be black. It almost feels like we're going to hurt Obama's chances if we're too enthusiastic about him.
Civil rights? Hey, you can sit anywhere you want on the bus. It doesn't matter. So I wonder, are we motivated enough? Are black Americans motivated enough to really have an effect and really push for change?
Kelly Goff, we heard from a lot of blacks and young people that day. And if Barack Obama could count on two groups of voters throughout this campaign, they were African Americans and young people.
That's right. Those are actually, in fact, young people are second only to African Americans as the strongest base for support.
And as you think back on that event and, well, the kind of power that coalesced around Barack Obama, that has really propelled him through this.
That's absolutely true. And, you know, again, it's very interesting looking at how things have played out, because as we all know, there's this whole debate going on regarding working class voters, a debate that is certainly not going to end after the results coming out of Kentucky this evening. But one of the primary arguments, we all know that the Obama campaign has been making, actually from day one, I think we might have even discussed it briefly last time at Morgan State, is this idea of redrawing the electoral map. Barack Obama saying that with these younger voters, the number of younger voters coming out to vote for him, the number of African-American voters he expected to come out for him and that have subsequently come out for him, that there's a possibility we could see an electoral map like no other we've seen historically.
Rui Teixeira, the Obama people have talked consistently about a new Democratic coalition, and that if you start counting those young people, and, well, people have always been very leery about counting young voters before because historically they haven't turned out. This year they did.
Yeah, I mean, primaries are not necessarily a perfect indicator of turnout, but I certainly think it suggests that turnout will be relatively high among young voters in this election. There was actually a pretty big turnout increase of about 11 points, I think, young voters in 2004. And I think we might see the same thing again. In 2006, 18 to 29-year-old voters supported the Democrats by 60 to 38. So if Obama gets in that range from young voters, and there's, you know, a much larger turnout of the young voters, logically this will be of considerable assistance to him. Now, on the other hand, that doesn't mean he can afford to lose the white working class at the level John Kerry did, which is another issue and a big issue. And Obama's task has to be to keep his deficit among those voters within a manageable range so that he can combine that with his strength among other constituencies. My estimate is somewhere in the 10 to 12 percentage point range is the deficit that Obama's looking for among white working class voters nationwide. If he can get that, and especially if he gets this additional turnout we've been talking about, he'll win a very solid victory.
And in some key states that people, you know, that we haven't traditionally thought of. I mean, when we're talking about states even like Colorado being back in play, places like New Mexico, where you've seen a growth in some of this younger educated population. And the other thing that I think it's worth remembering, because I think a lot of people have sort of forgotten about this. I mentioned it in just one line in my book, but it seems very prescient now, which is that Barack Obama said back in August of 2007, when people were challenging him on electability, he said, "I firmly believe that if I'm the nominee, we could possibly see younger voter turnout increase by 20% in some states. We could see African-American turnout increase by approximately 20%. And it's interesting that he came back to Iowa this evening, because let's not forget that in Iowa he won by, I think it was 20,000 votes. 17,000 voters that his campaign helped register were between ages 18 to 24.
Rui Teixeira, does it surprise you that in a contest like today's in Kentucky or the West Virginia primary just a couple of weeks ago, that Hillary Clinton's core supporters, despite the seeming inevitability of an Obama candidacy, Hillary Clinton's core supporters came out and voted for her again?
No, it didn't surprise me. I think that not only the demographic, but sort of the area of the country, your sort of Appalachian white working class voters have been the most solid constituency for her. And I think that, the media may have argued or implied that Obama was, the contest was leaning toward him, but it was very much a live contest. And Hillary had shown no signs of giving up. And I think that for these voters, it was a chance to go out and vote for the candidate they supported more. They felt more comfortable with culturally, the variety of reasons why they might lean as heavily as they do toward Hillary. And I think they went and did it, and you know, but I think we'll see something a little bit different in Oregon, actually. One thing I just wanted to bring up is that Oregon is, this is a surprise to most people, it's a heavily white working class state. 64% white working class voters is my estimate. That's not that far below Kentucky. It's actually higher than Pennsylvania, higher than Ohio, higher than Missouri. And I think Obama will do quite well among those voters in that state in this election, but we won't get the exit poll results for a while, at least for that particular slice of the demography, but
it must be hard to exit poll in a mail-only election, but
well, or whatever they're calling it.
Yeah, let's see. We get a caller on the line, and this is Jennifer. Jennifer, with us from North Park in California.
Hi, how you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Great. I wanted to talk to you all about the whole diversity situation. I worked on the campaign here in San Diego. I did the phone banking. I walked my precinct. I'm a precinct captain for the Obama campaign. And I just wanted to say that working in it, in the campaign was a wonderful experience for me. I've never done it before. But it was very inspiring. I met a lot of people that I wouldn't have met otherwise, just in working in the campaign. And I mean, I'm a Latina, you know, I run a small business here in San Diego, and just going to the meetings for the campaign, I met so many incredible people, all passionate from all walks of life, and just in the phone banking, and when we gathered for to watch results come in, they would have the camera pan the people behind Barack Obama as he was speaking, and I remember telling everybody, they look like us, you know, and it was just really inspiring just to see that. So I really think that if voters all over the country experience that once we go into the general election, they'll understand why so many of us have stood behind Barack Obama for so long.
And I think Kelly Goff, Jennifer, is telling us about why that word hope meant so much to so many people in the Obama campaign.
Yes, indeed. And I think also there's a, you know, again, a generational element. I mean, I think that you and I have talked about this in a previous show about this generational divide and all the different aspects that encompass this idea of a generational divide between the candidates. And it ain't just about age, right? It's not just about age.
Absolutely, you know, not.
Right. And part of it, one of the things that I think we previously discussed on the show is this idea of hope and the connotation it has depending on what generation you fall in. As one of my friends said, who was describing his father, who's a very loyal Democrat, he said, you know, people like my kids, this man's in his 40s, he said, people like my kids in their 20s hear the word hope, and they think that sounds really inspiring and great. Someone like his father hears the word hope, and he thinks, that's kind of a vague idea. I don't really know what that means. That doesn't have a lot of meat and substance. And I think we see some of that playing out on the campaign trail.
Jennifer, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. Thank you.
And Rui Teixeira, let me ask you about, she is a Latina. Senator Clinton did very well among Latin voters throughout the campaign in states where they mattered a lot. In Texas and in California, she did very well.
True, but it's fascinating to note that there was just some Gallup data released today that show Obama actually winning among Hispanics nationwide, given the choice between Obama and Clinton. I think it's about 7 points. So clearly, the idea that Hispanics supported Hillary and, you know, Barack got the nomination, perhaps they wouldn't come out for him, or they would, you know, sort of be embittered or whatever term you want to use, it doesn't seem to be likely to be the case, given that now that Obama looks to be the nominee, that Hispanics are already swinging in the context of the Democratic nomination contest back toward Obama. And then if you look at we don't have much data on this, but you look at matchups between Obama and McCain among Hispanics, and Obama wins those quite handily as well in some key states where these polls have been done. I think Hispanics are going to be a very strong constituency for Obama in the general election. I don't think the Democrats should worry about that too much.
Well, Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Kelly.
I was going to say, especially because, you know, John McCain, what's interesting about him is one of his sort of claims to fame in terms of winning the independent maverick mantle is his attempt to work in a bipartisan fashion on immigration. Problem for him, though, is exactly how does he campaign on that to try to make him move to the center? Because if he runs advertisements on his work on that issue to try to woo Hispanic voters, he alienates his conservative base. So I don't really see, while there's been all this talk about how he could be a more appealing candidate to wooing Hispanic voters, I don't really see how he campaigns on that without damaging his turnout among conservatives.
We talked about the generational divide and how it broke for Obama. Nevertheless, older voters very reliably went for Hillary Clinton throughout this campaign, and they could be some of those who were saying, the third of the voters we heard about today in Kentucky saying, well, they would have trouble supporting Senator Obama if he is the Democratic candidate, Rui.
Well, then you get to the issue, what do you make of people who, in the context of a hard-fought nomination contest, say they won't vote for the other candidate if that candidate gets the nomination? How seriously should we take that? Now, history, common sense, academic analysis all tend to suggest that people who say, you know, my candidate doesn't get the nomination, it's the other candidate, I would never vote for that person, they're very poor predictors of their own behavior. As far as we can figure out, most of those people return home, vote for the candidate of their party against the candidate of the other party when that's the choice that's actually before them. So I expect with older voters and with a lot of the voters who've expressed this reluctance to vote for Obama if he's the nominee because they supported Clinton, I expect most of that to evaporate. I think there'll be some, obviously there'll be some Democratic defections in the general election, but I actually think it'll be less than in John Kerry's not election, not more.
I also think, Neil, that one of the really important things that I think this whole conversation, the positive, the upside of this conversation, I think in a lot of ways, is that there have been a lot of attempts to try to make this election about race and gender. And at the end of the day, I really think this is a generational election. And so I think having a conversation about older voters and younger voters is a really positive, healthy thing, that's what the conversation is really about, as opposed to trying to make this a race-based or gender-based conversation, because I think it's a lot more nuanced than that. As we all know, there are different perspectives on those issues, race and gender, depending on what America you've grown up in. So Paul, I think that's a really important thing for us to remember.
Paul is with us on the line from Marshall in Minnesota.
Hi.
Hi, Paul.
it's been a long time since I've been on the radio.
Well,
What was the question now?
What surprised you about this campaign?
Well, I thought from the beginning that Hillary was going to win. I don't know, because she's doing so well. But, you know, Obama came back. He's so charismatic. He's like this charmer, this big charmer.
And who did you support?
I supported Hillary.
And when did you make up your mind?
I made up my mind in the Minnesota primary. I voted. There was a large turnout. They're all young people, and it was just great. First time that I got involved with it. So,
well, Paul, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
And it's interesting, Ken Rudin, as we look at the amount of energy that has poured into these Democratic contests. Again, it's been a while since there's been a contest for the Republicans that meant anything. Senator McCain wrapped up this nomination some time ago. But if you look at money as an indication of how well the candidates are doing, well, Senator McCain, we're just hearing tonight, had his best month yet in the month of April and made $17 million. Senator Clinton did $22 million in the month of April, and Senator Obama made over $30 million in the month of April.
I think when you add the money and you look at the issues that most Americans care about, the price of gasoline, the war in Iraq, President Bush's approval ratings, as low as they are, I think on paper, on those numbers alone, you think that it looks very good for the Democratic Party in November. And as Kelly said earlier, perhaps Barack Obama his candidacy does lead to perhaps some more opportunities in states that normally don't go Democratic, like Virginia, like Colorado, like New Mexico. But at the same time, there are some polls that show that John McCain may have inroads in perhaps a state like Pennsylvania or Michigan, where we may not want to talk about it, but race, economic conditions, social status may play a part in November as well.
Rui?
No, it's interesting to note that already Obama is leading McCain in the latest Pennsylvania polls. If you just kind of take a running average of them, he's actually running ahead. Hillary's running even a little bit more ahead of McCain. But the fact of the matter is that now that the Pennsylvania primary, the fallout from it has died down, Obama is already running ahead of McCain in that state.
But let me just point out also that on the day of the New Hampshire primary, we got the winner wrong. And now we're talking about general election polls 6 months in advance. So obviously,
that's it's the only data we got.
Exactly. But I'm just saying, let's take it with a grain of salt.
Oh, absolutely. A whole cellar full of salt.
Can I just say one number that we did leave out, though, that I do think is significant in terms of the fundraising? I read that Obama is the only candidate of the three that actually reeled in 200,000 new donors, which is pretty incredible if you think about it, that there are 200,000 people out there who hadn't yet decided to get out their checkbook and somehow decided 18 months in to do so. Now, whether or not, I don't have the data on whether or not those are Hillary people who finally said, okay, but I just think that that's something that's pretty significant at this stage in the game.
Kelly Goff, thanks very much for being with us this evening.
Thanks so much.
Kelly Goff's new book is Party Crashing, How the Hip-Hop Generation Declared Political Independence. She joined us today from her home in New York. We're going to continue taking your calls and talking about the remainder of this campaign and looking ahead, well, all the way to November. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. This is an NPR Election News Special. This is an NPR Election News Special. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Senator Hillary Clinton enjoyed a big win in Kentucky tonight, and Senator Barack Obama can now declare a majority of elected delegates to the Democratic National Convention with about half the votes counted in the state of Oregon. He leads by 16 points, 57 to 43. NPR News has already declared Barack Obama the victor in today's Oregon primary. And again, of course, Senator Clinton scored a big victory tonight in Kentucky. With me here in the studio in Washington are NPR's political editor Ken Rudin. Also with us is Rui Teixeira, who's a visiting fellow at the Brookings Institution and an expert on political demography and geography. And joining us now is Steve McMahon, a political strategist, a media advisor for Howard Dean's presidential campaign in 2004. And he's with us from his home in Virginia. Good of you to be with us today.
Thank you very much. Good evening.
And Steve McMahon, it's all over bar the shouting, no?
Well, I mean, effectively it's all over, but I think Senator Clinton has obviously decided to stay in for a period of time, I think to give her supporters an opportunity to cast their votes in what is an historic, and what would be for an historic candidacy. But I think effectively you're right, it's over, and Senator Obama is going to be the nominee. I think you could see tonight Senator Clinton kind of adjusting to that fact and adjusting her rhetoric accordingly.
And it's going to be interesting how those two candidates handle each other over the course of the, well, I guess, 2 weeks left in the voting.
Yeah, and I think the biggest test for Senator Obama in the near term, obviously, is how he accommodates Senator Clinton and her supporters and makes room for them inside his campaign, which there's every indication that his campaign is anxious to do. But they don't want to send a signal that they're trying to either force her out or force her hand in any way. They want her to basically run the campaign that she wants to run for as long as she wants to run it. As long as it's not divisive, it's probably good for the Democratic Party. It brings in more people, as someone just pointed out a moment ago, 200,000 more people contributed just in the last month at Senator Obama's campaign. Senator Clinton had a great month. So it's great for the Democratic Party that this is going on, and the enthusiasm and the momentum that is behind change in this country is pretty significant and will pay dividends in November.
What kinds of gestures could the Obama camp make at this point to the Clinton camp?
Well, I think you're already seeing there was an article in the Washington Post yesterday about the fundraisers for these two campaigns getting together and beginning to talk to one another. They signed a joint fundraising agreement with the Democratic National Committee, which enables the Clinton donors to contribute to the party and to help Senator Obama without being disloyal to Senator Clinton. I think what you'll see is that there are a number of people in Senator Clinton's campaign who are enormous talents in the Democratic Party. They'll be folded into the Obama campaign. And I think that, you know, Senator Clinton would be anxious, if she's not the nominee, to make sure that there is a Democratic victory in November. So she'll be out there campaigning vigorously, and I think very soon after her own candidacy comes to a conclusion, however that conclusion is.
Ken Rudin?
Do you see any Steve, do you see any reason why Barack Obama would not acquiesce in certain delegate allocations when the DNC Rules Committee meets on the 31st regarding Michigan and Florida? I mean, any reason why you think Hillary Clinton might have to take a fight to the full convention?
You know, I think it depends upon whether the Obama campaign is confident that the nomination is secure and can't be denied under any circumstance. And once they have that level of confidence, I think giving Senator Clinton the ability to say that she is standing and fighting for the people in Florida and Michigan and coming to some conclusion and giving perhaps the Clinton campaign more than the Obama campaign might feel they're entitled to makes no difference in terms of the outcome, but might make a big difference in terms of how the Clinton campaign is perceived to be treated, both by its supporters and by the folks inside the campaign itself. So my suspicion is that the Clinton campaign will probably get a better deal from the Democratic National Committee because the Obama campaign at some point will decide that they're not giving anything up by being more generous. And I think that's probably a good instinct.
Rui Teixeira?
What do you think specifically that deal would look like then?
What do I think it would look like?
Yeah.
I think Senator Clinton obviously wants to allocate delegates on the basis of the popular vote that she received in both those states. And I think that there's probably going to be a diminution of some sort in the total number of delegates. I think from the DNC's perspective, the most important thing is not rewarding states that broke the rules and not giving those states an inordinate influence in the outcome of the nomination, because then you would effectively be rewarding them. So I think that there's a fine little dance that's going on here. My suspicion is that they'll be allocated eventually in a way that is better than 50-50.
In Clinton's favor, you mean?
Pardon me?
Better than 50-50 in Clinton's favor.
Better than 50-50, which is what you... If you just wanted to say, we're not going to reward you for going out of line, we'll take your delegates, we'll seat your delegates, but we're going to allocate them 50-50 so that there's no effect that your delegates have on the outcome. That's probably the fairest conclusion from the party's perspective. But the Obama campaign wanting to make the Clinton campaign happy and the Clinton campaign wanting to stand on some principle will insist that they be allocated in some way that is more reflective of what happened. And I think at the end of the day, the Obama campaign will acquiesce to something in between 50-50 and what actually happened. Because, again, nobody wants to reward these states for going out of line, because there's going to be another nominating contest in 4 or 8 years, and it's going to be important for the party to be able to have some orderly process for conducting that.
Well, the discussions of how the primaries are going to be run 4 years from now, that'll be pretty interesting, but nevertheless, that's quite some ways away.
8 years from now, because there'll be a Democratic nominee, acclimation due to the fact that it's the President of the United States in 4 years.
We'll have to see about that. The voters have something to say about that in November. Nevertheless, let's see if we can get some more callers on the line. This is Jim. Jim is with us from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Hi, everybody. I want to say a couple things. I'm a 45-year-old white Republican, and I changed to unaffiliated so I could vote for Obama. And he got me excited about it. I guess the other thing is I was tired of voting in fear, and that's really what the Republicans have been playing on for so long. And I decided I wanted to vote for somebody I believed in and leave the party stuff aside, because when I voted for Bush initially, when he started running in the primaries, I really didn't think he was a great candidate. I really thought he was up there because of his name, but I wanted to support the party ideals, and I voted for him. And then the second time I voted against Kerry. But Obama's just been incredible. And I want to say something about the new donors. I don't know a lot about how politics is done anymore because I haven't been involved with a campaign like I've been involved with this one. But every time I went to buy bumper stickers or go get bumper stickers or yard signs or whatever, they don't give them away. You buy them, okay? And you sign a donor card, and you become a donor when you get bumper stickers, you know, the buttons, the yard signs. And I was kind of like the go-to man where I work in a place that has 400 people. I was the block guy, and people would come to me and give me money, and I would go get lawn signs and so on. That was all considered donations, and I wonder if that may be why they have so many new donors.
Well, no matter how they got them, and it's a pretty significant number.
If I could have gotten free bumper stickers and all that, I wouldn't. I might not have donated, but I did donate because I really believed in what he was doing. And I, like somebody else said earlier, he's a real guy, and I believe in what he's doing. And also, my heart of heart thing is we've got to get beyond race, and this campaign has shown that more than ever, that we are much more stuck on race than we think we are. And I'm still very hopeful, and I'm just really excited about what's going on. And it's great to be in on something. I kind of turned the corner and started going for him in January. And at that point, my Republican friends were saying, if you vote for McCain, you might as well vote for liberal. And I said, yes, I can.
Jim, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it. And really, Teixeira, Jim raises some interesting points. Part of John McCain's argument to the Republican Party is, I can win the independent voters. I can get even some crossover Democrats. Well, Barack Obama can make the same argument.
Yeah, no, he's consistently shown an ability to attract independents and some Republicans. He's consistently runs better among independents than Hillary Clinton does, for example. And that's going to be critical in this election. In 2004, Kerry only carried independents by a single percentage point. That's not enough. And it's especially not enough when you consider that all the data tell us independents are leaning strongly toward the Democratic Party, leaning strongly toward their positions on issues, are upset about exactly the kinds of things Democrats want people to be upset about. So if you can only win them by a single percentage point, that's pretty pathetic. And Obama, you know, would argue he will put many more of those independents in play and win them by double digits. And after all, the Democrats did win the independents in the congressional elections in 2006 by 18 points. So they want to get it in that range, and Obama might be the candidate who can do that.
Ken Rudin?
And Jim, the caller who just talked about that he's a Republican but tired of voting out of fear. There's a quote today from Chuck Hagel, the senator, retiring senator from Nebraska, who basically criticized the Republican Party and John McCain for running on this appeasement notion that President Bush mentioned when he was in the Israeli Knesset. And he said that perhaps Barack Obama's approach to foreign policy may be even better than his own party. So there are Republicans out there who are certainly willing to switch sides by November.
Steve McMahon, let me ask you, are you surprised at this point that in terms of the national opinion polls, and again, we're a long way from Election Day, that they're as close as they are at the moment? Both Senator Barack Obama and Senator Hillary Clinton lead Senator McCain, but it's closer than one might think if you think about an unpopular president, an unpopular war, gas prices going to $4 a gallon, and an economy that's stuck in neutral at best.
It does seem a little closer than you would think. Particularly if you look at a generic ballot where you say, in the presidential campaign this year, do you favor the Democrat or the Republican? What happens is when you're asking about Senator Obama or Senator Clinton, because there's still a contested primary going on, some of the Obama people are a little reluctant to say Clinton. Some of the Clinton people may be a little reluctant to say Obama. What will happen, I think, in the general election is this race will quickly return to big issues and whether or not we want to stay in Iraq or pull the troops out, whether we want to continue the Bush economic policies, which Senator McCain wants to do, or go in a new direction, and whether on health care people believe that everybody should have health insurance or whether people believe that everybody should be on their own. There are going to be big choices and big issues at stake in this election. And the Democrat, whether it's Barack Obama or Senator Clinton, it looks like it's going to be Senator Obama, will be on one side of that equation, and the Republican, Senator McCain, is going to be on the other. And at the end of the day, it's more likely that those are going to be the issues that determine the outcome of this election than any of the issues that have distracted people in the Democratic primary recently. The Republicans would obviously like the campaign to be a little bit more about the Reverend Wright and a little less about Iraq and health care and the economy, but I don't think the voters are going to buy it. We'll see.
Steve McMahon, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.
Steve McMahon, a political strategist, a media advisor to Howard Dean's presidential campaign in 2004, joined us from his home in Virginia. Let's see if we get another caller on the line. And let's go to Brad. Brad's with us from Chicago.
Well, hey, you guys.
Hey.
Hey. I just want to send out kudos to that last caller. Even though I come from the opposite side of the spectrum, I think he had something going on there. I'm a liberal. I've been a liberal since the Kennedy days, and I want to give my deepest sympathies for the difficulties that Edward Kennedy is going through right now. I think there is a beautiful symmetry going on here. Edward Kennedy passed on the torch to Barack Obama, as we all know. If you want to talk about surprises, well, there's been a lot of surprises in this campaign. No one can doubt that. My main surprise has been that this Democratic campaign has actually turned into a national campaign. People are coming out in droves and putting their support behind either Hillary or Barack. And right now, I think that McCain is negligible. I don't see. I think that polls are contrived and that they come from corporate media that say that, well, maybe Hillary might beat McCain by a few points or maybe Barack might beat McCain by a few points. But no, once the party gets back together, and I completely agree that Hillary will support Obama all the way or vice versa if it comes to that, that we have a very monumental change going on in this country, and it's because people are in need. People are concerned, and people are aware. I'm one of those. I'm a white male. I could be voting for McCain. I could be voting for a number of other Republican candidates, but I've experienced loss in my life, and I want to see the person who brings the poor into the campaign. I want to see people who bring the blacks into campaign. It's where I'm coming from as a white male. I don't understand all the whites that Hillary is picking up because I'm in need. I'm on Social Security, and I can't even afford to donate to a campaign. That's where I'm coming from.
Brad, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Change, Rui Teixeira. Change is certainly going to be a theme of this campaign, and Senator Obama will try to portray himself as the agent of change, and, Senator McCain as four more years of George W. Bush.
Well, that's exactly what he'll try to do, and the odds are he'll probably be successful. This is a country that is dying for change. I mean, if you look at right direction, wrong track, a classic indicator of where people think the country's at, and you get like, 17% of people saying we're going in the right direction, 80% say we're on the wrong track. So, you know, you should be able to sell change to this electorate. We're not technically in a recession, but I'm sure they're going to declare one any day now. The Iraq war, health care, Bush's approval rating is 28%, and so on. I mean, these are all signs of an electorate that's just dying to do something different. So Obama actually has positioned himself very well to run a general election campaign by sticking so relentlessly to the theme during the primaries when he might have been tempted to just throw a little bit of more red meat to the Democratic primary electorate, kind of like the way Hillary was going to do. And arguably some of his problems has been trying to do the dance of keeping his general election themes alive at the same time as he tries to sort of address these lunch bucket issues and appeal to the Democratic primary electorate. And that way, moving forward, I think it'll also be a challenge for him in the general election as well. I mean, you do need to combine change rhetoric with specifics. I think that's his challenge.
And Ken, before we completely write off the remainder of the Democratic campaign, we still have contests ahead in Puerto Rico, in South Dakota, and Montana. Give us a sketch of what's going to happen there over the next couple of weeks.
Well, I mean, since we've written out this playbook several months ago, we assume that Hillary Clinton wins big in Puerto Rico on June 1st and Barack Obama wins big in South Dakota and Montana on June 3rd, and then we decide what happens. It's also interesting we talk about the need for change. 35 Senate seats, 23 of them held by the Republicans. Democrats could pick up big seats in the purple states of like Colorado, New Mexico, Virginia, and that could also accelerate the Democratic vote totals for November.
Today, there were two decisive primaries in the Democratic contest for the presidential nomination. In Kentucky, Hillary Clinton won 65-30% with 250,000 votes more than her rival, Barack Obama. In Oregon, with about half the vote counted now, Barack Obama leads 58 to 42. He's been declared the victor in the Oregon primary by NPR News. Tune in to NPR News tomorrow morning on Morning Edition for the final tallies in Oregon and more news from the campaigns. And, of course, you'll get to hear excerpts from the speeches today of Senator Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. Thanks very much for listening. Thanks to our guests, Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor, here with us in Studio 3A. Also with us, Rui Teixeira, whose most recent book is, if I can find the piece of paper which is written
on... it's The Emerging Democratic Majority. That was the book before you mentioned.
The Emerging Democratic Majority. He's also
more topical than ever.
I'm Neil Conan. Good night from Washington.